Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first official podcast episode of The Bayman Review, a newly launched podcast for the Bayman Conference. I'm Haya. I'm going to be your host for this week's episode, and I'm in the presence of our first official guest, Sara Al-Abid. Hi, Sara. How are you?
Hi, Haya. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So, Sara, can you please introduce yourself a little bit? I know most of us here know you as the editor-in-chief of the Phoenix Daily, but if you could just give us some background about who you are as a student, what you do other than the Phoenix Daily, and I just, before we proceed, I also want to introduce you as our director general for this year's conference. So now I'm leaving the floor to you to tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you, Haya. I really appreciate it. So yeah, for this podcast, first and foremost, I would say I serve as this year's Director General for Bayman 2021. But as you said, a big part of my life is also serving as the Editor-in-Chief at the Phoenix Daily. All in all, who I am, what I do, I mean, I'm a policy researcher, I'm an AUB student, I'm an AUBite. I'm an undergraduate of political sciences with a minor in international law. I spent my day-to-day life trying to see where I can make an impact, where an impact is needed, and trying to help those that are already in the process of impact making, mm-hmm. catalyze their process and seeing where I can boost in and I can help that process. And then, of course, there's Bayman, which has been part of my life for a long time by now, almost going on 3 years. And I think that's all.
Okay, that's really great. So being that you already mentioned that you're a poli sci student and you're also a researcher in that field, can you please tell us a little bit about what made you decide to major in political studies? Did you know that this is what you wanted to do for the longest time, since high school, earlier than that, or once you first entered university? So if you can just shed some light on that experience.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. I mean, I never knew that political science was the field for me. What I knew was from a very young age, I grew up multicultural. So I grew up with having family and growing up in Europe, particularly in Denmark, in the Western world, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, I also had family and grew up in Lebanon, in more of the East, if you will.
Okay.
And so I always kind of saw the injustices that was happening in both places, in both locations, in both cultures, and I saw how they kind of interfered with one another and how that sometimes affected me as a child of both cultures and how it affected my peers and my colleagues and my brothers and sisters in each of their respective cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So I think from a very young age, I understood that this had to do with the political arena.
Okay.
And that it affected me on a day-to-day life, even as a child. So I think that's why I was attracted to go into the science of this political reality and figure out why is it as such? How is it as such? And what role do I play in all this?
That's really interesting, actually, because you touched on something that I would like to move on to next, just in terms of like generally get to know each other kind of thing before we jump into the juicier the juicier details of today's topic. So you said that politics plays a very important role in your day-to-day life. So on a more general level, how do you feel or how do you believe that politics truly does impact us in ways that we don't necessarily understand or notice? Sometimes it does. We notice it unconsciously, sometimes more prevalently. So if you can just shed some light on that as well.
For sure. I mean, politics really affects most things in your life, right? So for our listeners who are sitting now listening to this first podcast, I would challenge you, you know, look across your room, the cafe you're sitting in, your office, whatever it may be, everything from the furniture you're sitting on, your laptops, whatever device you're listening to us from, politics has interfered in that in some way, shape or form, right? So why is it that in one country we wear certain brands? Because that's who politically was kind of allowed to come and enter our market in terms of economy and all those things. And then at the same time, well, what do we watch? What do we consume of entertainment? That's also to a certain realm political, right? Who funds these projects? Where does it come from? These are all things that sometimes we don't think much about, and we don't have to. It's not our responsibility to think of everything, to sit and think, oh, why are the jeans I'm wearing political? Or why is it political of me to, you know, drink my Starbucks? I just like drinking my Starbucks, you know? And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I think it's important to sometimes challenge ourselves to think politically about certain things because we all know it's present.
Okay.
But it doesn't need to be something that interferes with our everyday life, every second of it.
Okay. That's really interesting, actually, because if there's one thing that I learned my first year at AUB, I took an American studies class. And the first thing our professor told us, which stuck with me since then, is that everything is political. And before mm-hmm. I joined university, I had never let myself think in a political manner. I still don't. Sometimes I do. Like ever since then, like 3-4 years ago to now, I forced myself to get into the world of politics as an outsider, not necessarily as an activist. I try to learn more about how the political world works. And, you know, I don't like to stay in the dark about those things. But it goes to show that I also have, you know, friends from both sides. I have friends who are so, you know, so immersed into the world of politics, like you, for example. I would believe that you are a political thinker. That's why you're our guest mm-hmm. today. And then I also have the complete opposite person on the opposite mm-hmm. side of the spectrum who says, I don't like to talk about those things, or I don't have right. a political opinion about those things. Right. So why do you think so many people tend to dismiss the idea of having political beliefs? Is it a mm-hmm. taboo in our culture? Is it because their families might also impose that on them, which is obviously, mm-hmm. I would expect a yes from you. But if you can also talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's look at us as the people who are listening, who are Lebanese or are familiar at least with the Lebanese context, right? So mm-hmm. I think this is a very common stereotype that we've had throughout the past years of young Lebanese being disassociated with politics.
Exactly.
And to a large extent, rightly so. And now more recently, to a large extent, rightly so, that they're no longer. And I'll go into that a little bit. So okay. why is it's important for us as citizens, as breathing human beings, right? Why is it that it's important for us to be in touch to some extent with politics? Well, because politics is what, at the end of the day, creates the legislation, creates the laws, the rules that govern us in terms of, well, what school do I go to?
True.
Why am I reading this history book rather than this history book? Why am I learning Arabic? Why are other schools not learning Arabic? All of this is decided by politics. So from a very early age, all that we do is decided upon that, right? It's what shapes us as human beings. And it's okay to not be in touch with politics to a large extent. But if you're not in touch with politics, unfortunately, you can't expect politics to then be in touch with you. And that's unfortunately what I saw happened in Lebanon, amongst other things, right? So for a very long time, we were out of touch as youth in Lebanon with our political arena.
Very true.
Up until a certain point, which was around last year, where many said, well, the political I can no longer ignore because I was only able to ignore it because I felt comfortable. I felt it didn't concern me.
Exactly.
Now suddenly it's concerning me, right? So mm-hmm. I feel it's interfering in my day-to-day life and not in the ways I want it to. Mm-hmm. So the problem here is, well, now suddenly you want to engage in this political process. You want to have a say, but you've never engaged with it before. And that's a really tough situation because it's your right to engage with it. But how do you engage with someone or something you've never engaged with before, right? It's like if I've known you, Haya, for 5 years, but we've never had a conversation. And suddenly I see, you know, Haya, you're doing something I'm not a fan of. Well, okay. How do I approach you about that? I've mm-hmm. never talked to you before. We're familiar with one another, but I don't know what language you speak, how to talk to you, how to engage with you, right?
That's such a brilliant way of looking at it. I've never thought of it that way. It's really interesting to see that, you know, especially myself, like when I started getting into like this notion of, you know what, I want to learn more about how politics works. I want to know more about the ins and outs, especially in the Lebanese context, because when the mm-hmm. Thawra happened, like mm-hmm. I let myself get to know more about the different sects that we had, mm-hmm. even though I wasn't familiar with any of them. I had joined clubs at AUB that I didn't know were political. It was honestly that bad. Like I was so unexposed, and I honestly mm-hmm. blame my parents to some extent. I blame mm-hmm. the school system to some extent. You know, there are obviously different players here mm-hmm. or stakeholders in this matter. But I also blame myself because, you know, I never went out there and wanted to investigate it on my own time.
Right. Yeah.
And now that I'm older, wiser, I believe, I'd like to believe that, I think that I could grasp the complexity of politics.
Mm.
But now that you actually touched on, like, how, you know, people don't know how to engage with politics because they don't know the language of it. So politics, to some extent, it tends to seem very complicated, even though it might be fairly simple. So don't you think that people push themselves away from it because of that, because of not understanding the language and the complexity of it?
For sure. I mean, to go back to the example of you and I, say I wanted to engage with you, but I didn't know how. I mean, I would probably sit down. I'd be like, okay, how do I engage with Haya? Maybe I'd not be able to come to an immediate conclusion. And I'd say, you know what? That's, never mind. Scrap that. I'm just not going to engage with Haya. I'll see if I can talk to someone else about this, for example, you know?
Exactly.
And I think that's what happened for a really long time in Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think what more recently happened is that there was a large camp in Lebanon of individuals who all together didn't know how to engage. And that's, again, rightly so to a large extent. They didn't know how to engage, but there's some comfort in being in numbers, right? So once you see yourself in numbers, not really knowing how to engage, that does lead you with some sort of direction. You say, okay, we're all together in this to a certain extent. I don't feel so alienated. I don't feel so demotivated to not engage anymore because I'm not in this boat all by myself. Mm-hmm. So that in itself mobilizes you to think, okay, well, this is apparently a problem across the board.
Yeah.
What do we do about that? And then you can move forward little by little, right? But if you think that, oh, this is a me problem, you keep it as a me problem. But sometimes when you see it's a general concern, you're more likely to move forward with it. But I think it's a really interesting point you also touched on in regards to who do we quote unquote blame.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think we don't necessarily have to blame anyone because we're still very young. Right, we're still in our early 20s. Some of us are not even in our early 20s.
We're very young, yet we're expected to think and act like adults, like very old, like older adults. And that's something I've been receiving, like in terms of criticism from my dad. So I don't want to interrupt your train of thought.
No, go ahead.
I'll build on what you're saying.
Good, but I think it's important to realize, for example, where were our parents at this age? Well, they were more likely also engaging in some sort of political engagement that they now look back at, especially understanding, you know, the context of what was happening back then, and think that's not what I would have reflected upon myself now. So I don't think we should expect ourselves right now to be engaging politically in such a responsible manner that in 30 years we look back and we think, wow, that was the right decision. No, but we have to engage with what the circumstances kind of allow us to. And I do think that it's unfortunate that in particularly the education system in Lebanon, which is political at the same time, because I for example, grew up in a school, part of my schooling was in Lebanon, part of it wasn't, but my schooling in Lebanon was in a context that said religion and politics were off the table, in the sense that was something we would get suspended, for example, for talking about.
Exactly.
And largely, to a large extent, that's rightly so, because that could cause conflict. But that also meant that I graduated aged 18, having never had a political conversation with any of my peers, whereas other schools were politicized. And so they had plenty of political conversations, but only kind of within one viewpoint, if you will.
Very true.
So it creates a really strange spectrum once you kind of leave that field of life.
That's very interesting, actually. And I actually have a question on this. When people say that they want to use, especially the younger generation, when they say they want to use their voice to, you know, to raise their opinions about a certain topic, be it political or non-political, do you think that in itself is allowing them to engage in political activity and political activism? Because we're constantly telling the younger generation, you know what, guys, you need to raise your voices. You need to have your voice heard by the people on the table, by the people making the decisions, by the people who have a seat at the table, while you don't. So why is it important for the younger generation to use their voices as a weapon of I was going to say weapon of destruction, but we can't say that as a weapon of, yeah. you know, it's in the yeah, end, it's a, movement. It's knowledge. And exactly. Mm. That's the best word. Yeah.
Mm. I think there's a balance there, right? Because we tend to both almost shame the people that don't speak up. And then sometimes when people are speaking up and you find that they don't come from a certain background where they are accredited or expertise, if you will, to speak up, then there's almost also a shame there. So it's really 100%. Tough. It's really yeah. tough. How do you find that balance without, you know, stepping on anyone's toes?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's there that for me, I've always said, and I think those that know me personally are maybe at this point very tired of hearing it, but I always say that if there's a situation of injustice and you choose to be neutral, you have taken the side of the oppressor, because you've decided that whatever injustice is happening is not worthy of your attention. Therefore, there is nothing bad or oppressing or injustice about the situation. And that's not the case, right? So sometimes it's important to speak up. And I think that speaking up, that activism, if you will, doesn't have to be on social media. Although we saw it this summer, for example, with Black Lives Matter in yeah. Lebanon, it did create a loud boom. It did create an impact. But at the same time, then there was also the conversations of the kafala system running alongside that, saying, but where are the loud screams for the kafala system in Lebanon?
Exactly.
And eradicating that, right? So.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be careful, because you shouldn't speak up because you're worried of being judged for not speaking up. You need to speak up because you see a situation of injustice and you find a responsibility to respond to that injustice. Do you have to come and say, I see injustice and I think this is the situation forward. We need to solve it this way. You don't have to. You don't have to solve the world. You don't have to change the world. But we mm-hmm. need to acknowledge where we as human beings are being flawed, where we're flawing each other, where we're treating each other unfair. And then perhaps leave some of the more resolutions and actually finding, you know, solutions to these big societal concerns, perhaps more in the hands of the experts and those that have been dealing with these for a while. But these experts and academics and policymakers, they don't stand a chance at solving concerns if no one is showing interest in them. If no one is telling them, I think this is a concern too. And if the whole public opinion is this is not a concern to us, then they have no means to really solve that concern, right? So mm-hmm. I think there is a balance between the two. But I think it's important to speak up. It's important to stand with each other, especially in the human context, especially with this year we've been going through. It's really mm-hmm. important to at least show that we're ready to stand with one another.
And I think one of the things you touched on at the end is that there's this unspoken of heftier responsibility on us as this up-and-coming generation. It's all I've been hearing from my parents, from their friends, is that we're going to be the solution. We're going to solve all the problems that our politicians are causing now. Do you think that this additional weight on our shoulders is something that we can eradicate by choosing not to take responsibility, by choosing to actually, put the people who are responsible for all of these problems that we're going through on the stand and have them admit to all the things that they're doing wrong and have them take responsibility instead of us having to come later on after like 4 or 5, maybe 10 years from now, we have to deal with a country. We have to deal with a system that is so corrupt that we need to completely revamp it from the ground up. So right. Do you think that's fair to us as a generation to have to face this huge amount of responsibility with all the added anxiety that we already suffer from on a daily basis?
I totally understand you on that. And I think my answer is relatively simple, because in Lebanon, we have several stakeholders, right? So we have our various political parties, some more new than others, some more historical than others. We have our state, we have our government, we have our members of parliament, and of course we have our international stakeholder interest groups, countries, NGOs, etc., that have an interest in us for various reasons. And I think the question here is saying, what is the role of a government? A role of a government is to serve us, right? if I'm not being served by my government, meaning I don't feel like I can go to my government, hypothetically, of course, if I'm not being treated the same as my neighbor, right? If I'm not mm-hmm. having my basic human rights, if I'm not having the things that it said it would promise me legally, you know, through parliamentary legislation, all these things. Well, then my government doesn't serve me. So someone else needs to serve me. Well, in this case, in Lebanon, we've kind of resulted to our political parties. The political parties have said, okay, maybe it's easier, it's simpler if each political party just serves their own interest group.
Exactly.
Right? It's almost become like this form of decentralization that's based off sectarian and ethno-sectarian interests. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, or for some people, they look at it as a problem. Others look at it as an opportunity, if you want. The problem is these political parties, these groups, all of these, even in the current circumstances, are also not able to serve their populations, despite their willingness to. They want to. It's what they've been doing for years. But they're also not, they don't have the resources anymore. No one does in Lebanon. So we're at a point now where we're really not being able to be served by any of the current stakeholders we have. The NGOs are trying to serve us, but that's also not enough. So what we need is simply, and this is something I think by time it will come very naturally and without any violence or any conflict, we just need to acknowledge what's currently with us is it's not serving us. It's not serving us. None of it is. We need something that will serve us. And so that's where we kind of rise from that. And I think it's hard because the youth kind of puts this pressure on themselves that they need to tear down a system
exactly.
in order to
exactly.
put up a new one. And mm-hmm. I don't think that that process needs to happen. I think it doesn't need to be a tearing down. You tear something down, something that's kind of is, yani, there is something holding it up, right? There's interest groups that are holding something up. So you need to be the force that's pulling it down. But I think at the end of the day, very soon, the entire Lebanese population is going to come to a rational understanding that we're no longer being served. There is no need to keep this system that's in place right now, despite politics, despite everything, in place. We need to just all work together and just, you know, coming to that next step. And do I think it's fair for that next step to be in the responsibility of us as our generation? Of course not. But at the same time, do I think it was fair that our parents' generation a few decades ago had to build the society that stepped out of the war, for example? No, of course not. That wasn't fair on them either. And with that, nothing is fair in life. But I think that's as cliche as it gets. And I think it's just a matter of trying to see really what ties us together rather than what sets us apart. And at the end of the day, I don't know if you heard more recently, there was an EU member state country where the government entirely stepped down because they realized they had done a rather lower scaled racist profiling, if you will, amongst minority groups, so that some minority groups had paid more in taxes where others hadn't. And that just meant that that government was no longer serving that people. Population. So mm-hmm. new government came about, right? And this mm-hmm. is a process little by little.
Only it were that simple for Lebanon.
Oh, trust me, I know. But yeah, so I think this is where I don't think the youth should be feeling this added pressure. I think it's a very natural phenomenon. It's something that's little by little, if we just start focusing on really what's tying us all together rather than what's setting us apart, it will happen.
Okay. I genuinely love that. I honestly couldn't have said it better, because the way that you think about it, I believe, is probably the most intellectual form of what we could probably describe it as. So before we wrap up, Sara, I was hoping that you can also provide some advice to our listeners, to our amazing audience, if you stuck around to the end of this podcast episode, on what it truly means to be a political thinker, and how can somebody like myself, who didn't know anything about mm-hmm. politics or didn't know about anything about how it worked, or who were the stakeholders, how would they get into it? How would they immerse themselves mm-hmm. into this world as beginners mm-hmm. Who have the will but don't have the way?
Well, first of all, I think Bayman is a great first step.
That's shameless self-promo.
Bayman is a wonderful step. And it was one of my first steps, you know. And it's been many people's first steps, because it's difficult if you're Lebanese or from the Lebanese context. to get into politics on a national scale and understand it there. But it's sometimes more simplified, although it shouldn't be, to look at the international relations and international affairs aspect of it. Yeah. So I think Bayman is a great first step. Even if you have no political background, you're perhaps, a pharmacy student, a law student, engineering student, whatever it may be, Bayman is a great first step. And other Model UN experiences are as well. And I think a second step, which is a two-part, if you will, is both engage every day, but don't overload yourself every day, right? So
that's so important, definitely.
So for sure, every now and then, look around your room and see how is this affecting me? Where has politics been affecting my room? But don't do it every day. I mean, if you wake up every day and from your pillow to your blanket to the roof over your head, you know, you're going to get overwhelmed and it's going to become one of those things where you're going to do it for maybe 2 months and then you're going to be like, never again. I feel exhausted. And it's not supposed to feel that way. But my first step in that direction would be look at something that to you is extremely obvious, right? So, for example, around last year, when people started taking to the streets, etc., in Beirut, question that. That's okay. Even if you sympathize, try to really have that exercise where you put your mind over your heart and say, I sympathize with this cause. I want to take to the streets too. I'm angry too. But look at it in the brighter context, right? So, for example, what I did last year when all this was happening was I looked around and I said, the context in Lebanon has been quite weird since the summertime. I started recalling how, I don't know if you remember this, Haya, but last summer, there was those weird and odd and random gas and benzene strikes.
On and off,
no benzene, but there was benzene, etc. And for me, as someone who's political science, I questioned that because I knew that the next day they had benzene. I think logically to myself, well, they didn't get benzene overnight, so they had it all along. So why did that happen? Well, usually from a political science perspective, I would say, well, this is something that triggers a population. It makes you upset
100%.
Because it's a daily essential. Something else, the forest fires, that really struck emotionally on all of us. We felt like we were incapable. We had an incapable government that couldn't react. That's also something that really tore on us emotionally. There was a lot of things that were leading up to those protests that really ignited us, if you will. It made us frustrated as basic citizens. And so those are the things I encourage you to look into. Don't think, oh, that's a fire. I don't need to think much further about it. Think, how does this make me feel as a citizen? That's the most important part, because citizens are the fundamental aspects of politics. So as long as you're a citizen, which I hope most of you are, unless, of course, you have refugee status or any other status, but that makes you just as much a global citizen. Look at what affects you, what angers you, what makes you happy. And that's politics.
Wow. Thank you so much, Saro. I am wowed by this conversation. I'm so lucky to be part of this conversation with you right now. And I think that's it for today. So if you have any final comments, or we can wrap up and thank our brilliant audience for listening to us all the way through these 28 amazing minutes. And stay tuned for next week's episode. Saro, do you have anything final to say?
We'll see you at Bayman 2021.
Oh, again, shameless self-promo, guys. So you'll be getting a lot of that in these episodes. Thank you so much for listening to the Bayman Review. And we'll see you, or actually you'll hear us, next week's episode. Bye.
Bye.